Tech Talk with Lee Stark.
There's an echo in the room. Hello, Lee.
Hey, mate, how you going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay.
We've been talking about interest rates, negative gearing, bank fees, bank charges, all those sort of things this morning. So it seems to get people's back up when we talk about the banks. And you can really understand why when banks continue to publish billions of dollars in profits.
Yeah, absolutely. As someone paying a mortgage, I completely feel every time there's an interest rate change, or even that it just stays the same. It's incredibly frustrating.
Let's talk tech. Couple of listener questions. Georgia says, I need to buy a laptop for photo editing. Needs to be able to run Photoshop. I've been told to look at one with a dedicated graphics card. I work with RAW files and need a laptop that will load quickly. How do I know if a laptop will suit my needs? I've got a question for you. Could you tell me what is a RAW file?
Yeah, sure. So lots of good questions there. A RAW file is basically a higher resolution image that comes out of cameras. You can get them, you can actually shoot RAW on iPhone and Android these days, but you typically shoot them on larger cameras, interchangeable lens cameras, things like that. And basically what it does is, think of it as like a digital negative. If you remember the old days of negatives where if you're in a dark room, you can get more than just what a slide would get out. Slide was the image the way you shot it and there was not much you could do, and the negative allowed you to get a little bit more light out, so you might push or pull the film to get a little bit more out of that image, make it lighter, make it darker, not lose details. RAW is digital negatives. In fact, for Adobe, the RAW format is actually called digital negative. But basically the idea is it's not the image as you capture it, which is what a JPEG is. A JPEG is very much like a slide image. RAW gives you a little bit more bandwidth to move. It takes in more detail. It takes in more brightness, gets in more shadow. So when you're tweaking an image, it's great for wedding photographers, for an example, the image isn't set in stone like it is with a JPEG. You get a little bit of flexibility. And so RAW files are larger, but they require just that little bit more processing power to use.
Okay, back to the question. The laptop. I need a laptop for photo editing. I've been told to look at one with a dedicated graphics card.
So you don't actually need a dedicated graphics card, or even a discrete graphics chip in a laptop to do RAW. It's a bit of a misnomer. A lot of people suggest that because it's often paired with it, and it goes hand in hand with a lot of other imaging work. If you are looking at Windows laptops for that sort of thing, the current range of Intel and AMD laptops, AMD's laptops have graphics cards built into the chip. It's part of how the APU works. So there's an option there. Pretty much anything there will be fine. Look at the reviews and benchmarks specifically for how they perform tasks. That gives you an idea. Intel laptops, if you're looking for one like that, I reviewed an XPS by Dell this year, and it's had an NVIDIA discrete graphics chip paired with it. They're fine as well. Another great example is pretty much anything by Apple. The Apple Silicon gear inside of a MacBook Air is on many levels as capable as what's inside of a MacBook Pro. In fact, they make an almost identical MacBook Pro to some of the MacBook Airs. But if you are if you need a big screen and lots of grunt, we suggest looking at things called workstations. You'll find them in workstation laptops. If you do that search, you'll find things like the MacBook Pro and MacBook Max, MacBook Pro with M3 Pro and M3 Max. You'll find Dells. You'll find Asus. You'll find a whole bunch of computers that way. Workstation computers are typically made for graphics people working in content and creation, and they're made to just do a little bit more grunty work. So if you do a bit of Photoshop, the reason why people say discrete graphics or even more powerful graphics is you might be working in 3D or video as well, and that's where those things are catered for.
Georgia mentioned Photoshop, and Photoshop is a software package. For people that don't know, Photoshop is a software package, and as the name suggests, you can manipulate photos and do all sorts of things in it. Most people, I suppose, that use Photoshop, unless it is for their living, that's what they do for a living, they only use a really small amount of what Photoshop can actually do. They use a small amount to get done what they want. But Photoshop, Adobe have changed the way that they do things these days. You used to be able to buy the software package, you'd get it on discs, and you could use it. These days, it's all you pay per month, and you get to use that software. Is there something like Photoshop that people can get for free?
Yeah, so fun as it is, even though I write about Adobe, I actually don't use a single Adobe piece of software on my computer at all. I've actually opted to move to programs that do similar things and actually allow you to buy them outright. I'm not a huge fan of cloud licensing. I'll use it if I have no choice, but there are choices in the Adobe landscape. So a really good one is owned by, it recently got bought out by Canva, but it's been around for a while, made by a company called Serif, and they do a program called Affinity Photo, and they've got Affinity Publisher, which is like InDesign. They've got Affinity Illustrator, which is basically a version of Adobe Illustrator but recreated by a different brand. They all range between $100 and $250. There's a lot of discounts through the years, so you can typically buy the entire Affinity package relatively inexpensively and you never have to pay for it again. I use another program on my computer called Pixelmator Pro. It's a Mac-specific program, but it basically is a version of it's very similar to Photoshop. It also processes raw photos, and it doesn't cost any more than $100 when I first bought it. It might be a little bit more now, but it wasn't much. And there's also free options, believe it or not. There's one that it might take a little bit of getting used to because it's not always super user-friendly. It's made by programmers who built a system to do something for free. But it's called GIMP, and it actually stands for basically graphical image modification processes or something like that. But long story short, it's a version of Photoshop made to be free, so you don't have to pay for a single thing.
So what's it called?
GIMP. If you look for GIMP and you look for photos online, you'll quickly find the GIMP project. And okay. Basically, it's a version of Photoshop. They can run on Mac, on Windows. It's, as I said, the user interface is a little bit trying. It's not always exactly the way it would be on Photoshop. It is made for free, but it does pretty much everything Photoshop does without you having to pay a cent.
Hank says, I'm looking at getting a phone for my child and don't want to spend too much. I found a couple of refurbished phones on a website that look really good. What does refurbished mean, and are they reliable?
So the answer is typically yes. When people are actually buying used phones, which is a weird thing in many cases, simply because you don't know whether the hardware is going to be really good, refurb at least gives you some peace of mind. What refurb effectively means is a company has gone through it, reset it back to scratch, and looked at the hardware to find out whether it was stable and replaced what was needing to be replaced, or at least reconditioned it, so given it maybe a new glass or a shiny polish. It's distinct from, say, going onto Gumtree or Facebook Marketplace and buying a phone off someone there, because they've not had that process done. The other reason why you might do that is some companies, I think one actually this week just started offering it, will offer basically programs like or extra warranty programs where even if you buy a used phone, you'll be able to replace it for free if something breaks. So think of it as a refurb phone as buying a used phone off of someone else, but there's a company actually backing it. It allows you to get some pretty inexpensive versions of iPhones and Samsung Galaxies, things like that. Doesn't apply to everything. You won't find a lot of niche devices in there, and it can take some time. But my father-in-law recently bought an iPad off of one of those refurb marketplaces, and yeah, it's certainly a great way to spend less. But keep in mind also, some new devices can be relatively inexpensive as well. It just really depends on what you're after.
Tom has a question here, and he said it, and we hope we've got it right, or we hope he's got it right. It says, please ask your tech guru if iPhone 6 and SE are still going to be operational after the 28th of October. My goodness, iPhone 6, that's a pretty old iPhone.
That's a very old iPhone. Oh, look, you can still use them, but they haven't been receiving updates for a while. I mean, the iPhone, this most recent update pretty much removed the iPhone 8 from the update cycle. So I'm pretty sure it even dropped off the iPhone X, iPhone 10, which came out at the exact same time. The latest update, iOS 18, is pretty much iPhone XR, XS, anything onwards. So your phone, your iPhone 6, has not been receiving updates for several years now. It will still work, but the apps you get, they might not. If the oldest operating system, from the sounds of things, that might be iOS 14, iOS 15, if that's how old it is, you probably won't. You may find that apps start dropping off, because when new features come out, when you're developing apps, they often start forcing you to upgrade. And that is a quite old phone. We're talking about a good 6-7 years at that point. So that's probably the longest amount of time. I'm surprised your battery still works, to be completely honest.
Yeah. He has to charge it every 10 minutes.
Probably.
Let's talk about some topics. Windows is coming to Android and iPhone. Well, you say sort of. Tell us more.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of people, if you go on holidays, you go on a work trip, you might not necessarily want to bring your laptop. Microsoft has been working on a way so you can actually access Windows remotely from a phone. Specifically, if you've got a work account and your work account uses Office, just Office Exchange, that sort of thing, or you go to a school, a lot of school systems in Australia use Microsoft, you'll be able to actually log into Windows specifically through a phone. It works at the moment on iPhone and iPad. Android's version's in testing at the moment, but the idea is instead of needing to bring your laptop with you on a holiday, you'll just be able to log into Windows on your phone and do the things you need to do and then go back to your life. The technology is really similar to what Microsoft built for its Xbox gaming system. For the Xbox Cloud Gaming, you basically log on to an Xbox in the cloud. This is very similar. You're logging on to a Windows system in the cloud. It's not specifically your Windows system, but it's tied to your account. So you'll still be able to do the things you need to do. You just won't need to have a laptop with you.
If you've ever dropped a phone and broken a screen, this story may give you some positive feelings. Durable phones you can physically drop apparently are coming to Australia. But how far can you drop these phones?
Well, you can drop them about a metre, to be honest. I mean, you shouldn't. You go out of your way not to drop them. Drop resistance and drop protection is there as sort of like a safety feature. It's not a be-all, end-all. I'll be honest, I was reviewing an HMD the other week, and it tumbled out of my hands and hit the ground, and I emailed the PR immediately and said, before I got a chance to take photos, it dropped, and they said, because it's a repairable phone, they said, I'm really sad that the glass didn't break. It would have made for an even more compelling story, because you can replace the screen in that one. Look, we're seeing more of these devices. Apple's new phones all support an improved version of their ceramic shield. So far, I've not been able to scratch it unintentionally, but I'm just waiting for my kids to accidentally get their hands on it because, of course, they sent the pink model, and that's the model my girls want to grab from my desk as quickly as possible. There are other phones from a company called Oppo. Oppo does a lot of mid-range phones, and some of the mid-range phones we're seeing this year for about the $300 price point actually include military-grade certification for drop resistance. So what that means is, I said they also include water and sweat resistance, but when you drop them, it means the inside parts won't jiggle and it will survive the shock and possibly the glass will be okay. That will probably be the case for one or two drops. Any hard drops on the corners might end up shattering the screen. That's what we typically find break screens, corner drops. But the good news is it means that phones are getting more durable and that's better for long-term use. However, if you're someone who's very clumsy with your phone, regardless of if it's got shock resistance or scratch resistance, put it in a case, put a screen protector on it, because like the reader or the person you emailed before, you're probably going to be holding onto your phone for a long time.
Ray says on the email, Lee, I laugh at this, he says, hey, Brent, your tech guy's brilliant, brilliant, but can you ask him to slow down? He talks too fast. I can't understand him. So you've got to slow down, Lee.
I've got to slow down. I get really excited talking about technology, but sometimes it makes me a little bit too quickly.
Okay, we'll slow things down. I'll talk in a quiet voice. All right, here we go. 5G at home. 5G at home could make more stable broadband, and it will be rural soon. Yeah, I know. When you say rural soon, 4G is rural. I've got a rural property, but the service strength of 4G on my rural place is crap. Crap. What about 5G?
Well, that's why this story, and I'll speak slower, that's why this story is actually so important for what it's worth. So the 5G at home technologies that exist are basically using a technology normally, which coexist with 4G. So believe it or not, when you access 5G on those devices, you could be accessing 4G and you have no idea. Now, that's why this technology is rather interesting. Optus has launched what's called standalone 5G. Seems like it should have been there from the very beginning, but it takes a while for this stuff to come out. What it means is that when you get 5G in these devices and these new devices and this new version of the technology, it will actually be just 5G. So just the high speed, just the high range. That's good news at the moment for cities where it's affecting about 3.6 million properties right now, which is not a lot in terms of Australia. Obviously, it needs to improve. I spoke to Optus about that, and they said more will be coming. That includes rural Australia as well. It's based in connection with the partnership Optus now has with Vodafone, which kicks off from next year and allows the two to share their network. So Vodafone subscribers will actually have access to the Optus network as it improves and vice versa. And Optus is loading in more 5G sites around around the country. So sometime in the next few years, if your rural property rent is not getting great 4G, it should get better 5G, and it will be dedicated 5G. It won't switch back to the 4G network without you realizing it.
Is Starlink going to go down the road of 5G or 4G or that type of technology?
Starlink doesn't need to. Starlink uses satellite connectivity, so it doesn't need to use anything like that. Satellite is more localized. It's a really specific type of connection. You actually have to use really specific hardware. But the point is they don't need to. Starlink doesn't rely on mobile towers. It relies on satellite connections. It is stable, but it's expensive.
Will you be able to, in the future, will you be able to use a service like Starlink, who, as you say, uses satellite technology? Will you be able to use that same technology if you're out and about in your car? So in other words, you'll be paying Starlink for your phone rather than an Optus or a Telstra or a Vodafone, but because it's satellite, you'll get much, much better service.
So, weirdly enough, satellite phones have existed for a long time, but they were unreliable, largely because they're just too power heavy, and 4G and 5G are more reliable that way. You can kind of already do that. A lot of people don't realize there's a bit of a patch. You can actually get a remote version of Starlink that travels with you. Basically, it's a modem and router that you stick in your car and powered by your car and just travels everywhere you go. And provided you turn that into a Wi-Fi network, which is all it would run as anyway, and you keep your phone connected to that network in your car, it would work in much the same way you're talking, because phones support voice over Wi-Fi. So you could technically use Starlink like that. It just might be super expensive to do that. So if you've got something like $170 a month to do that sort of thing, you totally could do that now. I don't know if it would be any more reliable than 4G, 5G, but rural Australia would be a really interesting test for that.
All right, mate, I'll let you go. As they say, love you and leave you. Thank you. We love having you over Sunday morning as part of our program here on the Weekend Breakfast Show. So thanks, mate, again for answering our questions. If you've got a question for Lee, you can send your email to us 7 days a week. And Lee's got a great website as well. So I always give out that website address. It's pickr, pickr.com.au. We'll catch up with you next Sunday, Lee.
No worries, I'll talk slower then.
Thank you, mate. Bye-bye. look, it is a good website with Lee. And yes, he does talk a bit quick, doesn't he? He does get a bit excited and talk like that. So his address, his website address is pickr.com.au.